Music City, Nashville, Tennessee. Two verses and a chorus shy of a hit song. Here they are. It's Scott and it's Hino.
And the Music Road Show.
All right, welcome back to the Music Row Show. We're glad that you came on back.
We are indeed.
Yeah.
We'd like you to join into the conversation, and you do that by going on to Facebook, / the Music Row Show, or you can, if you're one of those Twitters people, you can go on the Twitters.
That is true.
And it's at the Music Row Show.
That is true.
Or you can mail us,
Yeah, don't forget Instagram.
Instagram.
And I'm sure there's plenty of other places.
There's lots of places. Snap, aren't you on, what's that, Tinder?
No.
What?
You're not?
I don't think
you're
so.
You're not?
You know, I was gonna, but then my wife said no. Oh. So that put an end to that. Oh. She swiped left on that idea.
I was just thinking. I thought you had a t-shirt that says swipe left.
No, that's just what most people do when they see my pictures.
That should be, if we ever made a band, that's what we should call it.
Swipe left. I love it.
There you go.
It's a hit.
That's it. Hey, also want to remind you that once a month we're doing the Music Row Showcase.
Yes.
The next one is coming up in April.
April 23rd.
April 23rd.
We got some great folks lined up,
too. We bring in, we're always bringing in the hit makers, but once a month we're going to start bringing in just the people we've seen at the writers' nights that we love, and we just want to put a shine a light on them.
Shine. There's that shine word.
Shine.
Again.
There it is again.
I love it.
All right. Hino, please do the honors and introduce our lovely guest.
Drum roll, please. We have a great, great recording artist and songwriter, Shelley Fairchild, is joining us. She's back. She's a longtime friend of the show and one of our favorite singers and songwriters here in Nashville.
You're so sweet.
Her hits include You Don't Lie Here Anymore, Kiss Me, and Tiny Town. And she's got cuts with lots of artists, including Lee DeWise and Maggie Rose and Little Big Town. Heard of those guys. And she's got a brand new project out called Buffalo, which is amazing. I listened
Thank
to it today.
You.
Awesome.
Thank
Love
you.
It. And we're just so thrilled to be able to say Shelley Fairchild, welcome back to the Music
Thank
Show.
Thank you. Yeah.
Yay. Whoop, 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 whoop. You know, you were one of our first guests ever when we started doing this show 10 years ago.
What?
Yeah. Can you believe it?
Are you serious?
Yeah, we were when with WLAC.
I know where you were. That's what I was just talking today to my guitar player, Cade Doyle.
Hi,
he's
Cade.
With me again, and he was there for that show. And he said, I thought that was on Music Row. And I'm like, no. They moving
we're on. You know, there's off Broadway, there's off Music Row.
Right.
That's kind of where we're at now.
That's right.
Yeah, that's where we're at.
I think you guys look fancy here.
We came here for the Catfish Place across the street.
Yeah. Mainly. But look at your audience.
I know.
That's what listeners don't know. We have a whole audience outside the window.
We didn't have that at WLAC.
Yeah.
No, you didn't. Actually, nobody was there. It was just us.
Now there's just cranes.
And like old donuts outside.
Right.
And coffee.
Donuts.
No, I don't know.
Okay. This album is so good. So good. In 12 years, Ride has never left my wife's CD changer.
Seriously?
And and my wife doesn't like many things, and I gave her this, and now that one is also in the CD changer. So that means for the next 20 years, I'll be listening to Shelley anytime I'm in the car.
So please come out with an album every now and again
now
so
and
that
then.
He can change it up a
May
little.
May you be forever young. I'm excited about that.
Yeah. No,
That's
it's
sweet.
so
Thank
good.
Thank you, wifey.
When you think back to 2004, Shelley in the studio, what has changed most for you creatively as you recorded this new project?
2004, it was legitimately my first time to ever make a record. It was my first real time in the studio. So, so many things have changed. I mean, I've made a few independent projects, before I put this record Buffalo out, and,
that were also great, by the way.
Well, when I say... Thank you.
Yeah.
Well, when I say independent, too, I mean, one was completely independent. One was on a label, but that was an independent label. Mm-hmm. So, but I would say about Buffalo, it's my first time First of all, it was funded completely by my fans and friends and family. So I did a Pledge Music campaign, which is like a Kickstarter. It's a crowdfunding site. And it was completely 100% funded by people that just wanted to hear a new record. So that was enormous. I thought no one would respond. And I hate asking for anything, especially money. So, but everybody just came in and we raised the money in 2 days.
That's terrific.
Completely.
2 days.
Funded. 2 days. Dang. Met my goal. And then from there, and it kind of continued. Yeah, because you can keep it running for a while, you know, until your project is ready. So that was so ridiculously exciting. And then now I've ended up on the radio. It's completely independent. It's me and my manager, and we're just showing up, you know, trying to get bookings and just hanging out and trying to get on the radio. And so... yeah, that's it. That's what's fantastic. So different. So many things are different, but that's the biggest. You cool. Know?
Hey, want to play? Want to play a song?
Want to play a song?
So there's such a great groove running through this album. I mean, it's every song is just groovalicious. I mean, great musicians and
wait a minute,
groovalicious. I just wrote that.
Oh, you know what? I wanted to say one more thing about this record.
Okay.
It's the first time I've ever been a part of production. So okay. I started this. I was on the road singing backgrounds with Martina McBride, and she said, why don't we, because I wanted to go in the studio and make this record. I had a few songs, and she said, you can do it yourself. You know what you want. So I went in, and I had, like, you know, a director, a session leader that day that was a guitar player named Tom Bukovac. But for the
most that guy.
Tom
That little old session player.
Yeah.
But he led the session, and I had some amazing players on that session, but I was the producer, so to speak. Mm-hmm. So we kept about three songs from that session, and they made the record, and then I brought in my friend Jeremy Lister and Carrie Ott to help me finish the record. So, but I'm part of the production of it, which was a whole new thing for me.
Yeah, because before, like you said, it was your first time recording something. You were with a label. I mean, how many people were there directing and telling and leading?
So many. I mean, when I first made my first record, Ride, we had two producers, but besides Buddy Cannon and Kenny Greenberg, those were the producers. Besides them, we had, you know, an A&R, a head of A&R. Then we had, like, the responsible A&R agent that was working on my record. Then we had the record label president. Then we had all these people that had to be, you know, it had to be filtered through.
Right.
So everyone had to okay the songs. Everyone had to okay the tracks. Everyone had... it was a lot, and now it's just, you know, good old me, little old me, just saying, that sounds great.
I like it.
So on that note, though, the sound, how deliberate was the sound of the album? Was that something you went for specifically, or was it a happy accident? Talk about how you came to that.
You know, the sound of this record, I wanted to make something a little more that was like a cousin to my first record, Ride, because the rest of my records have sort of explored some different areas of me musically, you know, my rock, pop rock side, my sort of soul funk side with my record Ruby's Money. That's the last record I put out. This one, I really wanted to write songs that I cared about, that I could listen to for years and remember, you know, exactly where how it made me feel, like real songs. And I wanted it to rock, because that's what I kind of do on stage. So I wanted it to be able to translate live. And so when we put the band together, I was like, I want it to feel like a live experience, because my live experience, I feel like, is what is, you know, the best part of what I do, really. So, and it did. And we just, honestly, it was no pressure. We just had a really great time, just a handful of friends. Everybody was doing it for less money than they ever made before, you know, than they usually make. And we just put it together. It just came together.
So how much live recording then did you do when you were trying to capture that live thing? Were you all in the room, or did you track separately? Or
we were all in the room. So there were two different band configurations. So I had one session that's like three different songs, and you'll see that if you get the record. And then the next session had, you know, five players, and we did the rest of the songs. And there are 11 tracks on the record. So overdubs are what you do when you go in after you record, like an initial recording, for those of you who do not know what that means. And so we did not do very many overdubs at all. I wanted to be able to recreate it live. So if I have backgrounds, you know, I don't have to have a lot of different singers. It's legitimately one singer or two singers. Right. And then the drummer, there's not a lot of crazy trickery with the drum tracks. It's just raw. It went down like that. We didn't fix a lot. It just happened that way. The bass player, same thing. I didn't have a lot of different guitars because I don't have a lot of guitar players on stage. And I didn't want it to muddy up the sound. I mean, I'm a singer. I wanted to be able to hear my vocal and hear the backgrounds. And mm-hmm. So that's, I mean, it's pretty, what you see, what you hear is basically exactly how it went down. We did a few takes and we went through and picked the ones that we liked and we fixed a few things on those tracks and then that's it.
Cool. Nice.
Word. Very cool. So, as a high schooler in Mississippi, your sights were set pretty firmly on New York City, on Broadway. Mm-hmm. And then you got the lead role in Always Patsy Cline. How did that change your destination? Did singing those songs kind of surprise you as far as...
Yes.
Talk about that.
Well, okay, so I was in high school. I was in show choir. So we did theater. We did a lot of things that were theatrical.
What was the name of the choir again?
Attaché Show Choir.
Attaché.
Yeah.
Wow.
We were number one in the country, bro.
Ours was Kaleidoscope.
Really?
Yeah, back in
Where
the day.
Where was that?
In Oregon.
In Oregon.
Yeah, yeah, we were like not it. Number one
I mean,
in the country.
I mean, it's like attaché. That's a briefcase.
It's a briefcase, yeah. But it's a French-sounding briefcase.
It's great. I love that. But anyways, we had a great time. Anyway, so I grew up in my, you know, high school years learning to love the theater and theatrics. Ugh, shocking.
That is just unbelievable. I don't get that at all.
So when I went to college, shocking again, but I went to college and in my college years, I only went a few years, but I had the opportunity to audition for a professional production of a musical called Beehive, which was a 60s musical. Mm-hmm. It's all impersonations, Grace Slick, Connie Francis, Brenda Lee, and I auditioned, but they needed an understudy. So I did not actually go on stage, but I sang off stage, and then I was there in case something happened. It did not nothing happened to anybody on that particular thing, but I then became something that the artistic director of that theater became someone that he was interested in as an actress and singer, and they were doing a production of Always Patsy Cline, and he asked me to audition, so I did, and that... led me to Patsy Cline was legit. I grew up listening to Willie Nelson and my grandfather was a gospel singer, just a family band. And he listened to Patsy Cline, but I didn't know a lot of Patsy Cline songs, just things that you would know, just, you know,
right.
By default being in Mississippi growing up. But I learned 27 songs I had to sing. And I don't really sing as low as Patsy. So I had to really work on phonetically getting everything the way that she sang it, and Mandy Barnett was our first Patsy Cline in that show, and
oh, really?
I studied Mandy Barnett at the time, and I watched a lot of, Coal Miner's Daughter, was it Coal Miner? No, Laura.
Sweet Dreams. Sweet Dreams.
Yeah, so I watched that. I mean, I just studied as much as I could, and I did. Ended up getting my voice lowered and everything. So it was shocking to me because I didn't see...
Wow.
I know, right? It's just the more you use your voice in that range, the better. The warmer it becomes, the more stretched out your vocal cords are. So, and I did. I have an interview of myself on a little TV station, and I sound. I'm talking like I'm like, well, yeah, come out to the show. I mean, it's the craziest thing. So, but it taught me a lot about country music, and I love Patsy Cline to this day. I always sign off. The name of the show is Always Patsy Cline, and I always sign off. Love always, mm-hmm. Shelley. So it's. I don't know. It was very influential. It helped me save money to move to Nashville.
But then you decided Nashville was a destination rather than New York.
I decided, I totally trailed off on that.
That's
one.
Okay.
Sorry,
we'll
guys.
Get you back.
New York was always because I love the theater so much. I just thought, well, that's where you go.
Mm-hmm.
But I knew that Nashville wasn't very far from home because I'm from Mississippi. It's like 6 hours. And I had a few friends that lived here. And I decided to give it a shot. And I'd never spent time in the studio or writing songs. I wrote a lot of poetry growing up, but I didn't know how to do all that. So when I came to Nashville originally, I could afford Nashville. I didn't know if I could afford to live in New York,
right.
You know? So I thought, well, if something takes me to New York, I'll go to New York. But right now I'm just going to try Nashville out. And I never left. I've been here for a very, very long time, but I won't tell you how long.
Wild.
Well, on that note, we're going to take a quick break, but we're going to come back with more Fairy Share Child.
That was good.
You know what? But first, we got to tell you that this segment is brought to you by our
good friends. Sane Marine Reductions.
No, we're talking about Main Street Productions.
Oh, sorry.
Yeah. Similar, but not quite. Fred is the main guy over there at Main Street Productions and does great music videos.
He does.
He shoots feature films and TV shows for a living, so he knows his way around shooting things really, really well.
And you're using just top-line equipment and somebody that absolutely knows how to get the best out of it. His website is mainstreetproductions.org.
Easy for you to say.
mainstreetproductions.org. Let me do this part, too, okay? Yeah. We're going to be back with more of Shelley Fairchild.
Nellie Schler. What?
Stop it. You know,
Shelley Fairchild.
I want her to stay with us for 45 more minutes.
I'm just going to silently dance while she's getting my name wrong.
Shelley Fairchild. We'll be back in just a few minutes on the Music Row Show.
Okay. Oh, we're on.
Welcome back to the Music Row Show. We are on. We're having so much fun talking here. We forgot we were on.
10 years.
For 10 years
we've been doing this, and we still don't know when we're on the air.
We've been talking for 10 years.
Yes.
I think we've been talking for 10 years.
We're here with Shelley Fairchild. Yeah,
hello.
Figured out how to say it now.
Well done.
And that's off of her brand new album, Buffalo, and that's a song called...
Lies.
How do we buy this album?
How do we buy this album?
You can buy this album anywhere that albums are sold. iTunes,
really?
Amazon. You can listen on Spotify. You can. I actually am going to have... They're not for sale in stores yet, but we don't have distribution quite yet.
Yeah.
So if you come to see a show, I'll have CDs there.
Wow.
You can go on my website. It's www.shelleyfairchild.com. And... Oh, and I have a show this Thursday.
Yes, you do.
Where's in Nashville, Tennessee.
That's at...
It is at the Mercy Lounge.
Mercy Lounge.
Mm-hmm.
Mercy.
Which is on 8th Avenue South. And I go on at... doors are at 6:30. I have an opening act, and I go on at 8:30. So.
Full band? Wow.
Yeah, full band.
Full band.
Look at you.
Cade's going to be there. He's here now, and he's going to be there then.
Wow.
We go to like 10. It's not all night long, but...
Okay.
You know.
Yeah.
Maybe 10:05.
You got bedtime
maybe
to
10,
do
like 10. That Ooh. Seems lucky.
Okay.
Ish. All right. Ish. So how autobiographical is your writing in terms of, do you always write stuff that's going on in your life?
I lie.
Or do you make up
constantly.
Stories?
That's why I wrote that song called Lies.
No,
that's not true. I don't lie.
Now I don't know what
to believe.
I don't
lie, but that's the thing is like, it was really hard writing this record because I kind of in the last 5 years have gone through a lot of personal things, and it was hard for me to actually be honest about them in the writing room,
mm-hmm.
which is so crazy. I know as a songwriter, cause that's the only thing that you really can write about is what you know. But so the first song that kicked off this record is called House on Fire. We're going to play it for
that's
you.
A
I
great
think.
Song.
Yeah, thank you. But it was, I wrote it with my friend Travis Meadows and Lisa Carver, and it was the first song that I felt like I was actually being honest in, which is crazy because Travis was like, oh, girl, you sound like a house on fire. So that's kind of bad that that's
that sounded
what
just
I,
like him.
That is
your
a
voice
great
was
Travis
so
Meadows.
Low and everything.
I love him.
Wow.
He's epic. But and then, you know, Lies is another song, and that was really a very personal experience of just when you're trying to draw things out, you don't ever want to have, I just don't want lies around me. I don't want to tell them. I don't want them, you know, so that was very personal. And I, there's a song called Unholy Spirit. It's about addiction.
Thank you. Thank you.
What about it?
I love that song.
That's a great song.
Thank you.
I love that song.
So I have some family members and people that have been in my lives that have struggled with a lot of addiction. And that was important for me to write my experience around that. And Why Can't We Carry Each Other is just about us, you know, taking care of each other. We're headed to the same place. Come on, we gotta carry each other. So there's a lot. Yeah, I try to speak my truth.
Great co-writers on this. That's one of the things we've mentioned this all the time, because I listened to it on Apple Music earlier,
mm-hmm.
and you know, you don't get any liner notes. I want to know who wrote this, and there's none of that's there.
Yes.
Which, you know.
So I'm glad you have it here.
Yeah, because now is the first time I'm seeing who you all wrote this with.
Absolutely.
Like, awesome.
And I believe if you do download it on iTunes, you'll get the booklet that tells a lot. So,
oh, sweet.
You know, a lot of the times, you're right, Spotify, different you can't really find information, but
yeah.
And the kids aren't looking for the information either.
Not so much. I was always looking for the
information. Back in my day,
that doggone kids these days.
When I read the albums.
How old are we, guys?
We didn't have liner notes.
How old have we been doing this?
So you mentioned the crowdfunding, mm-hmm. And that's a scary thing. I'm always afraid the only person that donates is my mom.
Is my mom.
You know, here's your check, honey. I'm afraid of that. And so the funding came in remarkably successful for you. It was incredible. And that you had to be so excited. So you go to work in the studio, but then you ended up not keeping most of that.
I know.
How scary was that?
And
Were you feeling pressure for the people that had donated?
Well, my biggest, yes. The answer is yes. My biggest fear was that people would be very, very upset with me because it was taking me longer than I had ever anticipated. But right. I was writing and once I went in to record, I was keeping all the pledgers updated. But when I recorded and I wasn't happy with what I recorded, it was like, this is the process. So I talked to the people at Pledge, which they're very, very instrumental in helping you navigate through it. And they said, just be honest. People just want to know they just want you to be honest with them.
Right.
I mean, a lot of people just pledge, you know, $10, you'd pay $10 to buy a CD in the store. And all they have to do is wait. It's not that big of a deal to wait. Mm-hmm. But people that pledged $1,500 on, you know, a signed guitar or this or that or the other, I just was like, okay, I promise it's coming. I just want it to be right. But everyone legitimately was supportive. I had one person say, I'll just buy it when it comes out, and took their money back. That is it, out of everybody.
That's fantastic.
So
I'm sorry about that. I was moving at the time, and I needed
every little
yeah. You needed that $10. I understand.
So then what was different? I mean, I'm trying to picture what that sounded like that you ended up not using.
Polka.
The polka.
It was
version,
actually,
yeah.
You know, it was, I was speaking Spanish, and I love speaking Spanish, but it just didn't make sense on the record. Anyways, no, it wasn't that. Well, like I said, I was instrumental. I was the producer.
Right.
And I picked some songs that just did not, I didn't feel anything for.
Okay. So it wasn't so much like the production. It was the material.
It wasn't so much the production. It was the material, but that's such a big part of of what a producer does, which is why I love working with a producer, which is why, you know, my first record with Buddy Cannon and Kenny Greenberg was a fantastic first experience for me, because people always say, well, did you not get to sound like what you wanted because it was the major label, because I was on Sony at the time. I sounded exactly how I wanted to sound. I didn't have any negative. There was one song on the record that I wasn't like 100% fond of, but I didn't hate it, you know, and everything else, they let me just be who I wanted to be. So I was nervous about this go at it in the studio, and it really, because I was using other people's money.
Yeah.
You know, and that is exactly how it all happened. It literally was funded by my pledgers.
It's funny, because I asked this question in the last hour, that, mm-hmm. you know, is having too much creative freedom a problem sometimes, because you have so many. It's like when you go to a restaurant and the menu is 45 pages long, and you're like, how in the world do I pick?
Or there are 75 different flavors of gum at the gas station.
Yeah. Is how do you pick, you know? And I would imagine that it's kind of comforting to have somebody there to say, yeah, you should go towards these ones or that one, you know?
I mean, I think it's like it's like any kind of relationship where you coexist with somebody and you need help. So you're, you know, sharpening each other. You have to listen, and sometimes it's hard to listen if you're an artist, because you really are so adamant about your creative experience and your flow, and this is what I want to say and who I want to be. But I personally like to have the discipline of somebody else giving me some parameters. I like to say what I want to say, but I also like for people to say, okay, but if you steady the course in this direction, it will make a bigger impact.
Right.
And you have to sort of learn that sometimes as an artist. I think a lot of people flail about for a long time because they don't really understand that they're not catching anybody's attention because there's nothing solid there. It's very interesting. I mean, I was told with my first record, you should wear your hair down all the time. This is simple, but you should wear your hair down all the time because people don't recognize you when you put it up in a ponytail or you do da da da. And I was always like, whatever, I want to wear my hair however I want to. But it's true, people.
You say it just like that?
Yes, precisely like that. But people, it is so true. When I run into people, they're like, oh my gosh, I didn't recognize you because I look different. But if I wear my hair down, people are always like, oh, hey, Shelly. And I'm just now learning that may be why my record didn't work that first time. Because I didn't listen to Wearing My Hair Down.
That album worked amazing. I have my own thoughts about
that. Wait, that was you?
That was me.
That was you?
You didn't recognize it because my hair was in pigtails. That's what it is.
It's all coming to me now. Yeah, okay.
How about if we do a song?
Yeah.
Give that guitar a strum, would you? So we can make sure that... you got it there, Producer Logan?
All right, awesome.
All right.
You really want to hear me sing a song?
I do.
All right, let's try it then. Well, I did not write this song, but when I got the song, I was going through a really tough breakup and stuff, and I was like, this sounds like a song I should have written. So my producer, Kerry Ott, wrote it with a guy named Tim Lee Jones. And this song is my first single. It's on the radio right now on...
I heard it on Sirius XM, didn't I?
XM, yes. Yeah. It's on the Horizon.
The Horizon.
And then we're playing it on Lightning 100 here in Nashville, WRLT.
Very cool.
So, and here I'm on WSM playing it.
How about that?
It's awesome. This is called Mississippi Turnpike. Stranger, gotten a ghost. I passed by an old house, used to be my home. I'm afraid she might not miss me. Yeah, when I'm gone, Mississippi. Turnpike, 1,000 miles on that road, too late to turn around. This is how far I go, getting tired of pretending. Take me where I wanna be. Well, back to the Delta, back to the open green. There's a Buick in the driveway, 1963. Yeah, Mississippi Turnpike, 1,000 miles on that road, too late to turn around. This is how far I go.
Very nice.
I like that.
Wow.
I like that.
Ooh, my heart is palpitating.
I'm getting the vapors. So many good songs on this album. Damn Good Lover, such a cool song.
You can't say that on the air.
You're going to get speeding tickets listening to this song.
Damn Good Lover, man.
No, I said it. I said it.
Darn.
Let the FCC come. And then Unholy Spirit is just...
That's killer.
It's super powerful. And I'm looking at this. You did write that with Kevin Scott Rhodes.
You did one of my favorite Lisa Carver songs ever, Ready to Fall.
I
love that song.
I could
song.
Not leave that out. That was on my first record that was on Sony. But I love that song so much, and I always play it live. And we've done it so many different ways that I thought I just need to keep it going. It needs to
Absolutely.
Be on another record.
You're just going to have to put it on every album from
now
on
in a different version.
Right.
Fashion.
And then Muddy Water, I actually cut that on my first record. But that was my grandmother's favorite song on my record. And I lost her a couple years ago. And I was like, I'd always do it live. I usually start my show with it. And I had to. And Dennis Lindy's gone now. And he's an amazing songwriter. He's written so many amazing hits. And so, I had to honor my peeps.
There you go.
There you go.
With Unholy Spirit, talk about the decision to record that one as stripped down as you did.
Okay, so that's just me and piano. It's K.S. Rhodes is my co-writer on that song, and he, when we wrote it, he was at the piano, and it was such an emotional investment for me to talk about what I was talking about. That I feel like his hands and my singing were like the most powerful way to say what we were saying. That's
right.
It. So his hands on the piano, I just felt like anything else would have taken away from that moment. So it's the only one.
It's a killer song. Well, but and talking about those decisions to and how things make an impact, because it's the only one like that, it drew me in. And I just, it's just wonderful.
That's good. See?
Yeah.
And it's magical what you can do. It's like when you hear Aretha Franklin, I'm not comparing myself to her, but I'm saying when you hear her and it's just her and a piano, it's just, there's so much power in the silence as well as there is in a lot of noise. And it's I've never recorded a song like that. I have just as a work tape or something like that, but never on a record. So I had to do it.
It's very cool. Did you know Aretha's retiring?
Yes, I did know
that. Everybody's retiring, then they come back.
She says she's doing one last tour, and then she's done.
I could believe it.
Yeah.
All right. Well, why don't we take a quick break? We'll be back with a whole lot more of Shelley Fairchild here on the Music Row Show. So come on back. Welcome back to the Music Row Show. This song makes me want to start walking. In fact, that's what it's called, Start Walking. Shelley Fairchild is here with us. I'm having a real tough time with your name tonight.
Why. We've known each other for years.
Shelley Fairchild. It's a tongue twister. Say that 10 times fast.
Shelley Fairchild, Shelley Fairchild, Shelley Fairchild.
Show off.
Shelley Fairchild, Shelley Fairchild, Shelley Fairchild, Shelley Fairchild. Huh, it's weird. It's almost like it's not hard at all. Isn't it?
Anyway, she's got a brand new album out called Buffalo, and that is Start Walking. So there you go. She wrote that with, some other songwriters.
Oh my goodness, that's so funny. Yeah, that song is the most different on the entire record.
I was just going to say that it's so different.
It rocks out, but then it has this moment where it's like, where's she going to go? What kind of band is this? What's happening?
Can
to
I
me
get
right
my
now?
Money back?
What time zone am
Can
I
get
in?
Get my money. You totally took your money back.
He did it again.
Can I get
Can
it back twice?
Would you give her $10 right now?
Oh my goodness.
Give her $10. Okay, Shelley, it's just you and I right now.
I was going to say, you and me. Okay.
Yeah, yeah. You spent the last couple of years on tour with Martina, singing back up with her. Is touring more fun
do
on
people
a,
know Martina, or do you need to say Martina McBride?
You know,
it's sort of fancy.
It's
to just
not
say
Navratilova.
They might think that we're talking tennis.
I'm saying I think we need to clarify because
Martina
McBride is a boss. Like she hashtag is.
Hashtag boss.
Boss.
She's life. Incredible. So is
I'm sorry, I had to just do that.
That's okay. I'm glad you did.
Yeah.
Is touring more fun on a personal level without the responsibility of being what Vince Gill said he's having more fun now that he's not the hood ornament?
The hood ornament.
So when
yeah.
you're touring and you're not the person that's having to do all the radio tours and the interviews and all that, is it more fun? Do you actually get to look around at some of the places you're going to and stuff?
I'll say I love performing as an artist, as my own solo act.
Sure.
Me. I
Shelley Fairchild.
Also, Marilee Schmerchild. Shelley Fairchild. Yes.
Shmelly.
Shmelly. But I absolutely love being what I call a side guy. I mm-hmm. love being a support. I love singing background vocals. I mean, because I love music, I love the voice. I love
when the harmonies are all just right there.
I love harmonies. I love when somebody's counting on you and you really do a good job. I love doing that. You know, I mean, music business is so funny. Like, I can work my hiney off and you know, not see some type of result for a long period of time. But if you're singing backgrounds and you're hired to do it and you work really hard, then you can mm-hmm. see, yes, you get a paycheck and people, you know, they say thank you and it's, you do a good job. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So I've enjoyed that thoroughly. I love Martina. She's an amazing artist as well as just a human. So
she's human.
She is. I know she's tiny. My nephew stood in line to meet her
yeah.
at a meet and greet after a show. And he said, I didn't know she was a teenager. She's so tiny. She's so tiny. But yeah, that's amazing because you just do the job, show up. If you do a good job, you keep the job.
So then as a singer, though, you know, you're out belting your own songs one night and you're mm-hmm. singing background for Martina on another night. How do you have to adjust your singing to do that job? Because that's a whole art into itself, mm-hmm. background singing.
That's a great
singing.
Question.
Yeah.
I love that question because that's, you know, at the beginning of this, we talked about me doing theater. And mm-hmm. I think that's it's an acting job because you have to change your body language. You know, you have to do a lot of things that are a lot smaller because you don't want to upstage the main artist, which is
right.
If you're making big movements or if you're doing, you know, some big crazy vocal runs, you can't do that because you'll lose the job, you know. So it's an art into itself. And a lot of singers that I know that are solo artists also sing backgrounds. And it's work. It's work.
Did you have to have, you know? Did somebody show you the ropes on the background side of things of what to do, what not to do, or did you just kind of figure that out?
I believe there are two parts to that answer. Number one, like I said, in theater, I've done a lot of group
and show choir
right.
stuff.
And in show choir, so you work as a group.
You have to blend.
And you have to blend. So you have to pull yourself back. And you learn that. So you're either good at it or you're not.
Mm-hmm.
Second thing is when I was hired by Martina, and I've sung backgrounds before this, but when I was hired by Martina, I was hired, yes, by Martina, but also we had a section leader. Her name is Wendy Moten, and she's one of my favorite people in the whole world. She sings with Vince Gill. Actually, mm-hmm. you mentioned Vince now. She sings with Tim and Faith. She sang with Julio Iglesias for a year. She's all over the place. But I learned so much from her about professionalism, about when to keep your mouth closed, how to be there and be on point. And not ask too many questions, you know, and there's just a lot that goes into it. It's really interesting to keep a job,
yeah.
you know. So, and I enjoy it.
What are you
it.
Looking we at
should,
me for?
I'm thinking we should do a whole show on that. I think that'd be I think that'd be really interesting. I was also thinking in
you
show
should
choir.
Have all backgrounds, like Twinkie
yes.
from Stardom. Come
yeah,
on.
I love
I know
that movie.
Like Kim Fleming,
I love that movie.
Me, Vicki Hampton, Wendy Moten.
Let's
come
do it.
On.
Okay.
We'll do
I
it.
Like it.
Thinking about show choir, do you remember the girl in choir that you were talking about? Big facial expression mm-hmm. stuff. Mm-hmm. There was always a one girl in choir that does way too big facial expressions.
Yes.
You remember her?
I do.
Yeah, I remember
totally
mine too.
Remember her.
Let's take a break. This
I
is brought to
help
you.
I can't it.
It's always about him.
Pick on Heino
night.
I really love you, Heino, but
you know, you bring a lot of this on yourself.
Just bring it
I'm
down
so sorry.
You really do.
Well, I'm going to go take a break now.
Brought to you by Tin Pan South. The passes are sold out quickly, as always.
Right.
But you can still buy a single show tickets, and you can do that by going to tinpansouth.com.
That's right. The show is March 28th through April 1st.
It is so such a great festival here in town. I mean, something like do you love Tin Pan South?
I love Tin Pan South.
300 riders, 90 shows.
If you aspire to be a songwriter,
you have to go. I
300 songwriters, 90 plus shows, 5 nights, 10 venues.
Wow, that's a lot of numbers. Yeah. Go to tinpansouth.com, and we are going to be back with a whole lot more of Shelley Fairchild here on the Music Row Show. Yeah, welcome back to the Music Row Show. That is One Mississippi off of the album Buffalo. Shelley Fairchild, she's here with us right now.
Hello.
This whole album just
oh,
rocks.
Wait a minute. Now
she's demure.
I'm being sweet.
Hello.
No more talk of diamond.
Look at that. She's like got her pinky up now all of a sudden. What is up with that?
Mrs. Doubtfire's here now all of a sudden.
Are you calling me old? We have known each other
for a long time. I am so much older.
No.
I'm so much older.
50 is the new 40.
I am not 50. Oh,
I'm
just kidding.
I am. No,
can
it's.
I fire you?
Yes.
Yeah,
yes,
probably.
Thank God.
Finally.
Finally.
So I have to ask about the title, Buffalo. There's no song on this album called Buffalo.
I mean, could you write a song called Buffalo?
Yes.
I don't. Yeah, you probably. Let's do it.
Write a song called Buffalo.
We got 5 minutes.
Okay. Roaming around the country.
Yeah.
Nope.
My woman reminds me of a buffalo.
Oh, what is wrong with you, Hino? My wife is going to be so mad at you when you get home.
I didn't say she
doesn't listen to your show.
She doesn't listen to this
show. No, but his daughter's here and she'll tell.
Right. I'm busted.
Yep.
My daughter's here. Busty. No, so seriously, tell us about the title.
So, Buffalo. I am I'm originally from Mississippi. For those of you who don't know that. And I have a little teeny bit of Choctaw in me, and I feel very connected to that, the spirit of the Choctaw people. And I was looking for a title for this record, and I wanted to call it Muddy Water. And my manager and I were sitting down, and we were looking. It's just such a cliche thing to think about Muddy Water, you know, and then Muddy Waters, the artist.
Right,
and
right.
So it's like, she's like, no, I don't think that's maybe right. So we're Googling on the Google. Right?
Mm-hmm. Using the Googler.
Googling on the Google. Mm-hmm. And something pops up. Buffalo pops up from Muddy Water. I don't know why, but it did. And then it starts talking about the symbolism behind buffalo and gratitude. It's a symbol of gratitude. It's a symbol of abundance. And I, you know, have spent a lot of time in this town. I've made a lot of music. There are a lot of good things that have happened, a lot of bad things that have happened. But overall, I feel super grateful. And I wanted to, in this record, obviously, pledge music. That's how I made the record. I had the crowdfunding deal. And I wanted to just say thank you and have sort of a symbol of that out there. And I just said, we have to call it Buffalo. We have to call it Buffalo. We have to make people aware. You know, that's how I feel about them, and I'm very thankful for the journey so far. So
nice.
There it is.
I think that when kids, when people come to a music hub at first, there's a real specific idea of what success is. You know, I have to perform on Broadway. I have to get a Tony Award. I have to have a number one album. I have to get a Grammy. And I'm sure that's amazing when that happens, but just to have that artistic life and a sustaining artistic life is extraordinary. And can you talk about that? How has your vision evolved from when you first got here and what success means to you now?
So I have a friend who tend to get agitated by at different times in my career. I have gotten agitated with her because she always says it's going to look different than you ever thought. Mm-hmm. It will look different. It will look different. Success for you will look different than you ever thought. And I think it's because she spent so many years in the music business, and she has experienced what her dream was and then what it has evolved into. And I always had a vision. I tend to have a little OCD in my life, so I think things are going to be a certain way, or I can make them a certain way. And it's just, I'm constantly reminded that I'm not in charge, and, you know, things will look differently than mm-hmm. I ever thought. So I had a dream to be a singer, and I had a dream to be on stage in front of as many people as possible. And I had a dream that my music would be all over the world and all different countries, and I'd be able to tour and sustain and have a life as a musician. And I'm living, I'm breathing. I have a car, I have a house, I have a little puppy. You know, I don't necessarily have the biggest house or the best car or anything like that, but I'm living and I'm healthy and I make music. So yeah. I'm successful, you know, as far as that's concerned. I have a lot of people that I respect that also have a mutual respect for me. And, you know, I want to be on the radio. I want to be able to tour and make money as a musician. And hopefully that's going to happen with this record, more so than it has in the last 10 years. My first record, really, I was out there. I was doing a lot of work. I had a major label deal, so I had a lot of money behind me, and it was all very promising. But when things don't work out, I almost folded and decided, you know, I couldn't really do it anymore. But music never will let me go. So I was born with it as a small child, and it won't let me go. So I'm still here.
That's fantastic.
I love that.
And this album is going to do great things for you. It's so, so good. And if you listen to our show, and I'm sure you do every
all
Sunday,
the time,
but we don't say that all the time. We really don't. This is a terrific album, and people should go buy this tonight.
Thank you.
Right now.
Please do.
Yeah.
And where can they do that?
123.
ShellyFairchild.com.
You can buy it on iTunes. You can buy it on Amazon. You can go where else? Spotify. You can listen there.
iTunes. Oh, you said iTunes. Yeah.
iTunes.
So lots of places. I mean, surely you have access to one of those places tonight. So go check that out. Now, are you going to be touring or doing anything in support of this album?
Yes, that is the plan.
Yeah.
We will be touring. I mean, we're working right now on a cool thing. I want to hit up. Well, if you follow me on social media, it's just Shelly Fairchild. It's Shelly Fairchild on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, any of that. And you'll kind of keep up with what I'm doing. But we're going to do a little bit of a record store thing. I've printed vinyl for this record.
Really?
So we're gonna try to hit up some record stores around the country and play some acoustic sets, and as well as, you know, a normal club set, and hopefully some opening slots. I've opened for Martina this past fall, and, you know, some cool things on the horizon. So
very
keep up.
Cool. Yeah. How about theater? Is there any more theater in your future?
I want there to be. Thank you for asking.
Okay.
So I can put that out.
Let's put it out in the universe.
I would love that. I love the theater. I miss the theater. Mm-hmm. And I am always, my sights are always set on that coming back into my life at some point. So
cool. Awesome. Yeah. Well, thank you so much for joining us tonight.
Thank you for having me.
Everybody go to ShellyFairchild.com, spelled just like it sounds. It's Scott's laughing at me.
Shelly.
Fair.
Fairchild.
C-H-I-L-D. Oh, there you go.
Lord have mercy.
Hallelujah. Amen.
Yeah. Anyway, go buy this album. It's great. It's called Buffalo. You will love it. And thanks again for coming in. And thanks to our previous hour's guests, New North. That's going to be out, so keep an eye out. New North
Music.
Why
did you have to try doing that again?
Because I'm fascinated by my own inability to say words tonight.
Okay.